Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Take a trip down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as PSP rides again. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium with your hosts, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for August 18th of 2011. We are back after a week off. This is Michael Norris, and as with me always, my great co-host, the big old Jerry Oates. And Mr. Well, I can't say Mr. BS. That doesn't sound right. Mr.
Close
B,
enough,
Bobby
though.
Simmons.
Close enough, brother.
I think I've heard that before, Bobby.
You heard that? You got that right. Oh, goodness.
Well, what did we miss last week? Anything about, any important?
You know,
when the Falcons started back playing football.
Yeah, but I was in the DTs, man. I'm so used to talking to you guys on Thursday night.
I started to just grab the phone and call in anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, geez.
Well, I was up counting money this time last week, and I learned well from Charlie Smith. I got first count.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
But we had a pretty good set of shows over the weekend. Good turnout for the most part. But as I was saying before we went on the air Sunday, oh, man, the rain up here was just unbelievable. It was funny. It would let up just enough for us to sell a bunch of tickets and people get in the tent and then it'd come down again. Oh, man. It was something.
What's the weather been like, though, as far as temperature-wise?
It's mid-80s. It's
really?
Not been too bad. Yeah. And you would not believe what the price of gas is up here.
Tell me.
$3.37.
That's cheaper than here.
Yeah.
I seen it today for $3.44.
You thought you were stealing the
you know, hey, I heard somebody on the radio, I always put the radio on WSB, the big channel here in Atlanta, the news channel, when I'm getting ready in the morning, and they said that they're predicting maybe by Thanksgiving it'll be under $3 a gallon.
Well, it's about time, isn't it?
Can you imagine we're sitting here talking about it being under $3 a gallon and we're relieved?
I know. And they're saying
That's why they do it that way. It's the old what I learned in retail is a bait and switch.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know we talk about our business and the things we do. Could you imagine if gas had been like this? I mean, you know, it was tough enough the way it was, but I mean, I don't have no idea how guys would have made it then. Sure enough,
I don't either, Bobby. It'd have been impossible.
Yeah.
Imagine what it would have cost weekly working for Watts?
Well, now, we haven't talked about this, but when I started, if you rode with somebody, trans was 2 cents a mile.
Yeah.
Man, if you rode with somebody now, trans would be $1.25 a mile.
Well, I always made more money off trans than I ever got paid anyway.
Oh.
That's
I know.
Didn't mind. I would drive guys when I wasn't even booked. I always carried my stuff with me, but I would drive guys because I mean it didn't make sense if I came over and brought a bunch of guys over from Birmingham to do Atlanta TV, and then one or two of them were booked in Chattanooga. What was I supposed to do? They rode with me, so I took them up there, and you know, I would charge them trans up there, and I'd get paid even if I wasn't working. Well, there was a rare occasion that Ole would have me work instead of one of them. That happened to me a time or two. I just used their name. But, I made more money, or as much most of the time, with trans as I got paid.
Hmm.
Yeah, it'd be tough now, man. It'd be tough.
It would be impossible. I mean, you know, the promoters, the guarantee would have to be so high just to cover the guy's expense that would increase the nut on the you know. I mean, you'd have to go back to the real old days where you had two singles and a tag and use four guys and a referee.
Yep.
Oh. My wife said we'd have to buy a van and put the baby faces out a block away.
I tell you what. When I lived in Shreveport, I had a van, and on Mondays we'd go from Shreveport to Tulsa and back. You know, I'd fill that van up. You know what my take was for the trans? $121. Because nobody wanted to drive it.
Jeez.
It was 350 up and 350 back, which I didn't care. I had to go anyhow. I'd rather be driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just me. You know, I'd rather have my own vehicle. I didn't care about driving. It didn't matter to me.
That's the way, you know, I'm still that way. Ever since I learned to drive, it's very rare that I can relax enough to let somebody else drive. Two that I can name is Bobby Simmons and Ron West. And Ron West is iffy sometimes. Ron likes to do icebox in his car.
I'm going to ask both of you. Have you ever ridden with Ronnie Garvin?
No.
No.
Don't.
I've had him pass me on the right side in the emergency lane running about 100 miles an hour.
I rode with that man. I've been knowing Ronnie Garvin since 1970, and I only rode with him one time. And I made a vow to the Lord, if you ever let me out of this car in one piece, I will never get to it. I mean, he was a good driver, but I'm telling you, man, Bobby out there on the Interstate 75, if those people were out there in that left-hand lane, he'd get. I'm talking about running 75 and 80, he'd get on their bumper. Do you hear
me? Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sure you've seen him go up down the road.
Oh, yeah. I'm serious. I've had him pass me, you know, just messing with me, pass me on the interstate. He'd be running about 100, 120 miles an hour and go by me in the emergency lane on my right. Just, you know. You heard what he did to Mac Murray up on that mountain where Mac lives, didn't you?
No.
You know, Ronnie was flying for a commercial airline up there, you know,
right,
hauling freight. And he was flying one of them great big planes. I don't know what it was, DC something or another. And a big cargo plane. And he buzzed Mac's house one night.
No, he
about 100 feet above the top of Mac's house. Turned the big spotlights on. And, you know, that plane that low and them big engines, you know, it rattled everything on the mountain. Mac said he knew who it was. It scared him, but he knew who it was. And he said, but the thing he's worried about was all them moonshiners up in them hollers, thinking the revenuers were coming.
We were in Albany one night, and one of the boys come in. He was snow white. I said, what's wrong with you, man? He said, I flew down here with Garvin. I said, well, what was wrong with that? Ronnie's a good pilot. He said, we flew under bridges and everything.
The funniest thing I ever heard Ronnie tell about his flying that cargo plane, I may have told this story one time. He was telling me down in Mobile. He loved to, because his flight pattern would take him over the Ohio River in Cincinnati, and he loved to, when it was pitch dark, turn all of his lights off and buzz those ships or tugboats or whatever it was on the river. Well, he did that one time. He was buzzing them, and just as he got on top of them, he'd flick his lights on and scare them. He did that one night. The minute he flicked his lights on, he saw it was a Coast Guard boat.
Yeah, he told me that.
It would have shut him down, man.
Well, he said he's just lucky they didn't get his tail number, you know, or the wing number.
He had to have been a heck of a pilot, man. Yes, sir. He took them under bridges and everything else coming down there.
Oh.
Jimmy was a pilot, too. What?
Yeah. He was actually a commercial airline pilot. I think he worked for, I don't know if it was Delta or what it was. I don't know if he's still flying on. I think Ronnie has retired from flying. I don't know if Jimmy still flies or not. I haven't heard. But, It's funny that after all those years being in the wrestling business, they both ended up in the Carolinas, both ended up as pilots.
Isn't that something?
Huh. We got a couple of things I wanted to mention before we get our guest on the line. I don't know, Jerry, if you've heard or that Bobby Fields passed away this past Saturday.
No, I did not know that.
Long illness. He was 77, and just wanted to tell our listeners out there to keep his wife Evelyn and his three sons, Bobby Jr., Randy, and Shane, in their thoughts and prayers. And I don't know if anybody's even told Don, and I'm not sure he would be aware of what's going on or not, because he's got Alzheimer's pretty bad from what I understand.
How old is he now?
Well, Don was the oldest. I think he was a little over a year or 2 years older than Bobby, so he's probably 79, 80, somewhere in there. Of course, Lee's been gone now for 10 years or so. But Bobby was the youngest of the three.
That's what I thought.
And, he was the only one that I ever got to see work on a consider. I saw Lee when he made his comeback against Bobby Shane in 1971. And, of course, Don was crippled in a car accident in the early 60s, so I never got to see him work. But I saw Bobby on a fairly consistent basis. And
what was wrong with him, Mike?
Bobby helped me out. He had cancer at one point. I think,
cancer is what it was.
Between that and the congestive heart failure, one or the other of them got him, but he's been in bad shape for a while now. But he was a true gentleman. What a sweetheart of a guy. And, good worker, very smooth worker. He reminded me a lot of Dick Dunn and Greg Peterson. Just that style, how smooth he was. And, was a real good worker, but. I came across a tape of him. First, the only time I ever saw him cut an interview, and he just kept talking and talking and talking. I said, Luke, that interview that you did, I didn't think you were ever going to be quiet. He said, well, after teaming with Lee for so many years and then teaming with Bob Kelly for so many years, he said, I never got to talk. So I was making up for it.
He was one of those dyed in the wool, protect our business at all cost.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And he came up to one of our get-togethers. Him and Evelyn and his wife came with Bob and Chris up to one of our. Well, you were there, Michael, when they came to the church that time, and we had Rocket there and Dromo, and it was just we were talking, and there was a couple of people there that were, they were on the outskirts of the business. They were never in the ring, and I can't remember who they were. But I remember as everybody began to filter out and leave, and there was just a few of us sitting there, he told me, he said, I know that our business is not the same anymore. He said, but this bothers me. He said, people will say, well, I knew you did this, and I knew you did this, and I know you did this. And he said, they were never in the ring. They think they know,
but
they're not
sure.
That's
the whole thing. That's the way I feel, too.
They're not sure. And he was very, very... Even at the reunions, he's very protective of the business, and it offended him if anybody got out of the way or didn't conduct themselves in a fashion that he thought they should.
Well, I don't blame him.
So, good guy.
He was that. He's certainly going to be missed. And also, Rich Tate, he's had a death and some illness in his family, so... we keep he and his family in our thoughts and prayers as well. They're going through a little bit of a difficult time. And our buddy Charlie Smith, I talked to him this afternoon. He was just gotten out of the hospital. Do you know about that, Bobby?
Yeah, he called me this morning. He spent about 10 hours in the hospital yesterday. High blood pressure. He was dizzy. They've told him not to drive. And they seem to think that the flight home from Seattle, being on the airplane for so long, might have affected it, but while they were at the hospital, his wife got sick, and she's still in the hospital. They hospitalized her and kept her.
Well, that was just a way for Charlie to get into the hospital and sell gimmicks there.
Well, I guess.
Well, he'd probably still be there, too, if he hadn't been bugging the nurses. They probably put him out.
They probably threw him out, yeah. You know I told you the story about the van burning up.
Yes, that's the funniest thing I've heard.
It burnt to the ground. I mean, we're standing there watching the thing burn, and he was trying to sell gimmicks to the firemen. It was the funniest thing you'd ever seen.
And on a lighter note, our good friend Ronnie West celebrated his birthday yesterday, so Ronnie's listening to us. Happy belated birthday.
Happy birthday, Ronnie West.
Yeah, buddy.
Just because you're growing old don't mean you have to grow up, and that's
amen, brother.
That's somebody that enjoys life. I tell you, I learned more from him just to how to enjoy life. You know, he is words can't describe him. It's just a wonderful person, one of a kind. Well, I'm going to try and get our guest on the line. I called his house this afternoon, and it was morning for him, to remind him of a show. Charlie reminded him because Charlie saw him out in Seattle, and I called and got his wife on the phone. He was already out fishing, so that's good work if you can get it.
I heard that.
Hopefully we can get Mr. Savage on the line with us.
Hey, hello.
Dutch.
Yes.
Hey, it's Michael. It's Michael Norris. How are you doing this evening?
Fine. Mike, can I speak up a little bit?
I got my Bluetooth headset on. Let me speak up a little bit. It's still afternoon where you are. But got Bobby Simmons on the line with us, and an old acquaintance of yours, Jerry Oates, is with us. Welcome to PJ.
Jerry Oates.
How you doing, Dutch?
Well, Jerry, for pity's sakes, it's been 600 years.
It's been a long time, Dutch. I tell you what, I really enjoyed my run out there with you guys. I really did.
You did, huh?
I did.
Well, that's great. We were glad to have you. It's just too bad it was so short.
I know. I really enjoyed it.
How are you doing now, Jerry?
I'm doing good, Dutch. I really am. I'm doing good. I'm living in Savannah, Georgia now.
Savannah?
Yeah.
I remember working against, who was it, Nick Kozak in Savannah.
Is that right?
Years ago, and Mario, that's when Mario Galeno and I were partners out of the Atlanta office.
Yeah, it's, my home is Columbus, but my wife's from Savannah, so I moved here and really love it here.
You remember Chief Little Eagle?
Oh, yes.
I had a riot with him in Columbus. Fred Ward was promoting. We were opposition to the Atlanta office. And Little Eagle, I busted him up in the ring. He bloodied him up, and the sheriff come up and arrested me in the ring and took me to jail. That made every paper on the west on the East Coast. We sold out everything we did after that. That's why Gunkel wanted Fred to buy in. Because we started going gangbusters with Little Eagle. Is he still alive, do you know?
No, he was it had been 10, 12 years ago. He was living in Texas, and he had had a guy that was doing odd jobs around his house for him that ended up killing him.
Oh,
come on. I never heard that
one.
For pity's sakes. How's your health, Jerry?
It's great.
Well, I just had open heart.
Did you really?
Yeah, they put in four bypasses, four stents, and two valves.
Well, I'll be dog.
One more valve, and I needed your heart.
The only thing that bothers me are my knees. You know, I've had quite a few knee operations. That's about it. But other than that, I mean, I still work out and take care of myself. I know you're still in good shape.
Oh, well, I'm an old man. I'm 77 now. I can't understand how you are all beat up. You never took any bumps.
Well, I thought somebody was throwing me around in there.
Yeah, I told you one night, the next bump you take will be your first. You just stared at me.
Yeah, I did. Do you live in Seattle?
Me, no. I've never lived in Seattle. I lived, ever since you met me, I lived up in Kelly Hill, halfway between Amboy and Yakult, Washington, right next to Mount St. Helens. We have a big farm up there.
I don't know why I always thought you lived in Portland. I don't know why I thought that.
Well, I you know, I ran Seattle. Washington was my territory, and then Don bought in with me.
Right.
We were out drawing in 50-1, and he, how come you're up there drawing so much money and you're using the same tell that I'm using? Well, I said, Don, I'm not promoting in 1945.
That makes a difference, though.
He stared at me, too.
You got a lot of stares, Dutch.
Well, you knew Don and I were partners, right?
Yes, I knew that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Elton, we had to give Elton a percentage, too, to keep him happy.
How did you wind up out there?
How did I wind up out here?
Yeah.
Well, Kaninsky came into St. Louis. Harley and I were on the same card, and Harley Race and I were on the same card in St. Louis, and I was working against Big Bill Miller. And Gene was with somebody, I don't know, but Harley was working against Angelo Poffo. And Gene saw my match, and he says, boy, you really held your own against Miller. I says, well, what are you supposed to do? I said, he's a great worker. He said, how'd you kind of like to come work for me? I says, work for you? I said, I didn't know you were a promoter. He said, well, I just bought British Columbia. And he said, I'll give you X number of dollars to come out there. I says, a guarantee? I said, that's unheard of in this day and age. He said, no. He says, we'd love to have you start as a heel. So I didn't go out at first. I went back and finished my little run in Tennessee and went to Oklahoma. And then after Oklahoma, Kansas City. And in Kansas City, I finally went out and saw what Gene was doing. And from then on, I homesteaded out here. And finally, I bought in 1968, 69.
Well, how was his territory?
Well, it was on fire from 60, when I first went out to work with him was in 65, I think. And we got it on fire. There was Stephen Little Bear, Steve Kovacs, John Tolis, Don Leo Jonathan, myself, Eric Froelich, Ivan Koloff.
Good Lord.
We had quite a crew going at that
yes,
time.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Well,
we were all young. We were all young and stupid then. We didn't know what we were doing.
What all did he run?
He ran all of British Columbia, which is immense, and we'd trade talent back and forth to Montreal, and some with Stu Hart. And then Don got a little jealous down below, down south, and we started shipping some guys down there.
So
Georgia
how long did that territory last, Dutch?
What's that now?
How long did his territory last? I mean, did
Don Owens?
No.
Gene?
Yeah.
1967 or 68 when he bought in till about 1983 when Tomko bought it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll be dog.
Yeah. Well, Gene and I were friends for over 40 years.
I just never heard of guys going up there for him.
For Gene?
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of guys went through there. A lot of big names that are in the business went through there. A lot of them couldn't cut the mustard because you had to work with Gene at least once or twice a week, and that was
well,
60 minutes to 90 minutes.
Something,
yeah.
Had something to do with it.
Yeah, because one of these 10-minute matches, you worked Broadway, was a one fall 30 minutes, and the main event was 2 out of 3 falls 1 hour, and you generally went 45 to 50 minutes.
Is Don Leo Jonathan still alive?
I just saw Leo Monday. I went up to Dean Silverstone's get together there in Seattle on Lake Sammamish. Dean was there. Don Leo was there. Pepper Martin, Ed Moretti, and I don't know some of the real old timers that were there. I understand that Byers was there the day before. I didn't get to see Dick. There's quite a few guys there, especially some of the older guys.
Yeah, I met him in Seattle.
Who, Don Leo?
Yeah.
Yeah, Don's aces in my book. We've been friends for years. He comes down to see me every now and then. He has cancer now, you know.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Yeah, he's had several hunks of cancer cut out of various organs, and he's got bubbles in his spine from that diving he used to do in the mixed gas stuff.
Right.
Yeah, he's quite a human being, Don Leo. Still as big as a house.
Is he really? What
yeah.
A nice man.
Yeah, he's all bent over, though. He's on canes.
Is he really?
Yeah. Pepper's okay. Did you know Pepper Martin?
I did not know Pepper Martin, no.
One of the better workers in the business. You know, he made a lot of movies with John Wayne.
Right.
Yeah, John just loved him. He was in almost all of his movies that were in color.
There was somebody out that worked out in Oregon. I don't know if you ever met him or not, but Don used to just rave about him. It was Eric Pedersen. Did you ever meet him?
Oh, he was just a little guy, Jerry. He only weighed about 190 pounds.
Yeah, but I mean, he was a bodybuilder. I know he can.
Yeah, he was a bodybuilder. I met him a couple of times, but he's squirrelier in the cage.
I heard that.
Yeah, he ended up in Section 8 in the ward out here in Oregon somewhere. I don't know where he is now.
But I mean, was he still wrestling when you met him, or?
Yeah, he was still in the ring. Here's Jerry. You know me. I was always listed as a perfectionist in the business. This guy couldn't work for me in any territory I ever had. I mean, he was just over in Oregon.
Really?
He had worked with Ray Stevens or Pat Patterson, one of those guys, that had made him look like a fool.
Did he just hang out there on the West Coast, Dutch?
Around Portland area.
The way I understood it, Sam LaPrenzi told me that he would stay in his gym, spend the night in his gym. He just wanted to.
There's a lot of things that man would do, poor guy. I felt sorry for him.
I heard he just wanted to make enough money to eat and so he could work out, you know?
That's it.
Is he still
living? I didn't know that much of him, but I knew that he wasn't a real good worker. On any of our cards that you and I promoted, he would have been a prelim boy.
Is that right?
That's just this poor man's personal opinion, but what do I know?
Well, you would know.
He came through Mobile briefly. And
what the
heck? He came through Mobile, and they put the title on him. They made him the top heel.
They put the title on why? Because he looks so good?
Yeah, pretty much. Why?
Yeah.
He was big friends with Fargo, too, and Fargo was there. And
Jackie?
Donnie. They ended up leaving together and ended up somewhere in California calling themselves the Mr. Americas.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it lasted very long.
Uh-huh.
He and Don Fargo were, but I guess because they were both, you know, bodybuilders. And
well, Don Fargo was one heck of a worker.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was one heck of a worker. He was, in my personal opinion, he was a better worker than Jackie. Jackie was so over in Nashville in the South there, though. Is Jackie still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Well, I'd like to see him once again.
Where were you from, Dutch? Where was your home?
I'm originally from Scranton, Pennsylvania. But when the mines closed down in the 30s, my dad had to go to work working for a defense plant in Newark, Delaware, a tank plant. And then I grew up in Newark. My sophomore year in Newark, I moved across the line 1 mile away into Maryland on a farm. And I finished my high school out in Elkton, Maryland.
So how'd you get in the business?
I was stupid.
I didn't say why, I said how. You're like everybody else, that you wouldn't take anything for it.
Somebody's calling somebody. I hear that beeping in the background. You remember my brother Luke?
I didn't know him.
You didn't know Luke Brown, one of the Kentuckians?
I never met him.
Oh, he was the one. He refereed for me up here for years before he died. Well, Luke broke me in, of all places, in Macon, Georgia for Fred Ward. He got me booked in there, and then he was supposed to be there. I was supposed to be the younger brother of one of the Kentuckians. And he left me sitting there in the office and says, I got to go. We're going to North Carolina. Tiny and I are booked in Fayetteville. And he left me sitting there, and Fred Ward and Choo Choo Lin walked in and said, you're Lonnie Brown? I said, yes, sir. He says, where's Luke? I said, he went to Fayetteville. Man, I thought I was going to get pushed through the wall. Scared me to death. But anyway, they gave me a break, and I learned the hard way there. My first match was with Al Spider Galindo. Remember him?
Yes, I
did.
Oh, yeah. Al's funny-looking guy, right? Little bony arms, baggy woolen tights. Looks like he has somebody ran over him with a lawnmower on his head. Well, remember, I'm fresh out of school and everything when Luke broke me in. First thing I did, Al stuck out a leg, and I didn't know, I wasn't smart enough, and he stuck out a leg, and I went in for the leg, and Al disappeared. I swear he was 90 years old then. And he went in behind me, and all I saw was lawnmower and lights, mat and lights. He used me for like the lawnmower for about 8 or 10 minutes, and he graciously consented to beat me. I quit that night. Then I got my paycheck on a Thursday, and I said, that's more than I make in a month, so I think there's something to this business. And the rest
no
is history.
I had no idea you got started here in Georgia.
Didn't have any idea.
No idea.
It was an amazing run there. But Fred, for some reason, liked me. I don't know. And, we just made quite a bit of money there.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking through some results on the Georgia website for you, and you seem to work with you got lucky enough to work with Al Galento quite a bit between he and Luke Graham. It's like you spent your
I heard part of that, Jerry. Something's wrong with the microphone or something. I heard part of it. I heard Luke Graham's name mentioned.
I heard it. Well, I'm looking at your results. Looks like you work with Luke Graham and Al Galento your first month there just about every night, one or the other of them.
Yeah, they kind of took me under the wing after that, and especially Luke, or Graham, rather. He was, in my book, he was aces. He was really a swell guy. We got along really well together.
Well, where did you go when you left here, left Georgia?
When I left Georgia, where in the world did I go? Well, I went to Nashville. Want to hear a story about Nick Gulas?
I would love it.
All right. Nick Gulas, the world's greatest promoter, right? Stephen Little Bear and I, you remember Vince Bryan or Steve Kovacs?
Know the name.
He worked as Vince Bryan. He was out of Canada. And he also worked as Steve Kovacs, and then when he worked for me out here on the coast, he worked as Stephen Little Bear, had the Indian gimmick. Well, anyway, we went to a place called Finger, Tennessee. Look on your map, you'll find Finger. We got there at about 6:30 or so, and the match started at 8. And there wasn't a soul around the high school. There weren't any cars there. We had to knock on the door. Janitor let us in. And we went to the dressing room about 7:45. You couldn't get a flax seat in between the people with a sledgehammer. It was packed, jammed to the hill. We thought, boy, good payoff. So we worked our match. I was in the semifinals. Steve was in the main event. And we get back to Nashville and went to get our paychecks on Thursday. That was on a Monday we had that show. Anyway, we get in there, and Nick is paying us off. And I'm looking at my sheet, and it's not very much money coming out. And then we see this payoff from Finger, Tennessee for $12.50.
Come on.
$12.50. So before I could get out of my mouth, Steve says, what is this? Is this an advance on our check? And he said, these checks are kind of, so this money's kind of small for what we've done. Cool. He says, you're nothing but prelim boys anyway. You'll never make it in the business. He says, I'm paying you what I think you're worth, and that's if you don't like it, get out of my office. Well, I saw the hair go up in the back of Steve's neck. Little Bear's neck, and he reached across the desk and he grabbed Gulas by his lapels. About that time, Lester Welch stood up, and I looked at Lester and I said, sit down. So he grabbed a hold of him, pulled him across the desk, took him toward the window. Remember the old Nashville office where it was located, right across the Grand Ole Opry?
I never worked for Gulas.
Yeah, anyway, it was three stories up. He opened the window, pulled it up. He still has Nick screaming in the hall. You're going to kill me. I'm going to die. So he says, I'm going to count to three. You either give me more money, I'm going to throw it out the window. Well, he said, wait a minute. Okay. So he gave us an extra couple $100. And Steve said, well, that's more like it. He said, I'm going to fire you. I'm going to make sure that you don't get booked anywhere and blah, 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 blah. And that night we went to Kansas City.
No
kidding. Worked for Goggle. That's Nick Gulas for you. I'll never forget that man.
Yeah, I was told never to go there, and I never did.
I worked under the hood there as Mr. X in Knoxville. My tag team partner was Gene Dundee. We worked against guys by the name of one was Mike Peduces, and the other one was Red Donovan.
Mike Peduces, I remember that name.
Yeah, he was quite a guy. Big boy.
You knew Gene Dundee, too, because you knew Gene Dundee as Flash Monroe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, worked with him many times. Dutch, I want to ask you about somebody. Was Dale Lewis living out there when he passed away?
Dale was. Yes, he was.
Believe it. He had been dead several years before I even found out he had passed away.
Yeah, well, I think it's a shock to you. Dale's a friend of mine.
We
worked Atlanta. We worked Cincinnati. We worked quite a few territories together. And when he was going to come out here, he called Don to come in because he didn't know I'd bought in. And Don says, I don't know about this Lewis character. He's hurt a bunch of people because they wouldn't do what he wanted to do in the ring. I said, Don, that's all hearsay. Dale's as harmless as tits on a boar. He won't hurt a soul. And he said, well, I said, well, you're going to bring him in, Yeah, anything happens, you can blame it on me. So he brought him in. We made a ton of money with Dale. But one thing with Dale, which is understandable, you don't get cute with Dale in the ring.
No.
He'll do anything in the world for you. He's great on the mic. And you get cute with him in the ring. Here's a guy that was in a couple of Olympics and hasn't lost anything since he went to them. You'd be out of your mind if you challenged him.
But, you know, I never heard one time, Dutch, him ever taking advantage of anyone. Ever.
No. That's
and
all
I
hearsay nonsense.
I wrestled him I don't know how many times. I never felt uncomfortable with him at all. And, you knew his background, of course. But
well, you're lucky. I worked with him in Eugene a couple of times. He must have had an argument with his wife because he stomped me a couple of times in the corner. I looked up at him. I said, are you mad at me, sweetie? he had to go to the other corner. He couldn't stop from laughing. I said, are you really that mad at me?
Yeah, he was out there when I got there, and he was kind to me and my wife, and
yeah, gentleman.
He was just a sweetheart. Did he have leukemia?
Yeah, he had leukemia. His system broke down. That stuff is genetic. The second commandment says, "I shall visit the sins of the fathers of the second, third generation of those that hate me, and show mercy to the thousands that love me and keep my commandments." That's the last part of the commandment out of Exodus 20. People can't figure it out today why people get sick and have the same diseases their parents have. Well, it's passed down through your DNA, through your chemical composition. Read your Bible, make a liar out of me. That shocked you, didn't it, Jerry?
Yes, it did. But I felt the world of him, and I was just devastated when I found that he had passed away.
Yeah, Dale was aces in my books. I like Sandy Barr, and I were friends for 40 years, and Bill Ramos and I, like brothers. I can't go to one of my friends' funerals. I just can't do it. I don't want to remember him being put in the ground.
The
I was invited to a whole ton of them.
Bull's gone too, right?
Yeah, he was my mono.
What happened to Sandy?
Sandy's heart gave out. I mean, Sandy smoked like a chimney, you know. I used to get on him and say, will you quit that stuff? You should know better. You're still in fairly good shape, and your lungs are still good. Quit before you end up with a bad heart attack. And sure enough, 67, I think he was.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I really like Sandy.
Oh, Sandy was a good man, really a good man. You know, Sandy was quite a shibooker, too. Not too many people knew that. If he wanted to, he could put your head on your foot for you, whether you wanted it there or not.
He was a good guy, Sandy was.
Yes, he was. Give you the shirt off his back.
So, did you ever come across Duke Savage?
Yeah. Why he took my name, I'll never know. We went into, I was going to go into Hawaii. And Ed Francis says, Dutch, are you coming into work? I said, yeah. He says, are you related to Duke Savage? I said, Duke Savage? I said, I didn't know there was such an animal. He says, no. He says, he's been in here and he's laid an egg. And we're going to change your name before we come in here because we don't want to have anything to do with that. He says, we're going to call you Dutch Schultz, the son of the infamous gangster, grandson. I said, well, whatever you want me to do. So he laid a couple of eggs there in Honolulu. He was a harmless guy.
You mentioned Bull Ramos. They teamed up quite a bit. Well, Duke Savage was using the name Apache Gringo. when he teamed with Bull, I think, in Texas. I think they had a run in Los Angeles together.
Well, they may have. They may have, but probably Bull carried it.
You know, Bull.
You know, Bull was one of the probably one. He never got the credit he deserved. Bull Ramus, as far as this poor old man is concerned, was one of the finest big heels that the business has ever produced. He had the perfect Indian gimmick for it, too. And he would work your brains out for you.
Yeah, I wrestled him many times out in Oregon. I mean, he was...
He was a walk in the park.
Yeah, it was.
You wouldn't have to do anything. He'd get all the heat for you.
Yeah, you sure would. How long did... What was the end of the Portland territory, just like everybody else when Vince took over?
When Vince started coming out towards the coast, I told Don, I'll tell you what. You had either better talk to Vince and buy into this corporation that he's going to set up out here. It's best for us to get 20% of a $300,000 house than 100% of a $5,000 house. I can't do that. My father and I run this, but I ran this business. I said, you haven't run anything. The boys have practically run it for you the entire time you've been in business, Don. He said, well, what are you talking about? I said, here's what I'm talking about. I wrote it on a napkin. You give me what I want out of this business. And he looked at the napkin and told me what kind of a businessman he was. He said, well, that's only about a third of what it's worth. I said, you give that money, I'll let you make payments, and I'll sell it to your son, Barry. You want him to be a promoter. So I did in 1981.
No kidding.
That was my final stab at it. And he gave me what I wanted. I stuck around for 6 months to try to teach Barry the ropes, and the rest is history. Started going down the toilet right after that. Yeah.
That was a great territory.
It was. It was fantastic. Short trips, good money.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen anybody pay off like the payoffs from out there. I mean, really.
Well, here's the thing. So you guys adored Don because he gave you your money on Saturday night, remember?
That's correct.
Who do you think brought all the money back in from the other shows to give it to him so he could pay you? Three guesses, and the first five don't count.
I got you.
I never got a bit of credit for anything. The boys hated me because I ran it like a business. I didn't run it like a circus like he did on Saturday nights.
Well, I know one thing. I enjoyed it. That was probably the best time I ever had in the business out there.
Yeah, well, a lot of guys say the same thing, and it just amazes me that he would refuse to do what was better for the territory by letting New York come in and use some of their talent in conjunction with his or ours, but he wouldn't do it.
Was he as wealthy as everybody said?
Don Owens had close to 2,000 acres in and around Eugene, Oregon. He would buy bulls and heifers for $16,000 to $17,000 apiece. When he was given the territory by his father, after his father died, he axed his brother Elton out of the will. Elton had to get an attorney to fight him to get back in. So Don gave him all those southern towns. And he had more money than the Pope.
I always heard he was wealthy.
Very wealthy. You don't want to hear some of the stories I know. Not on this radio show. See, when you tell the truth today, You get a lot of flack from people they call attorneys, you know, the professional liars.
Right.
Yeah, you get a lot of flack from them. There's 10 woes pronounced against them in the scriptures. One of them is, woe be unto you attorneys, you scribes, you Pharisees, you hypocrites, for putting on the people a burden too grievous for them to bear, and with the smallest of your fingers you won't touch the matter. How do you like attorneys now? That was pronounced against them 2,000 years ago by a fellow by the name of Christ.
That's right. So actually, his dad started that territory.
Yeah, his father started it, yeah. Donner Elton. Elton wrestled a little bit in college at the university and boxed a little bit, but they never were any really good. Don never had a pair of ties on in his life.
Never did, huh?
Yeah.
Why didn't he ever take the matches downtown somewhere, like special shows? Like the big
what
building
did who?
We ran in Seattle, you know? That was a big building we ran in Seattle. You
yeah, that was the Seattle Center Arena.
Right.
Yeah, I was the only guy in the United States of America at that time that had a professional wrestling show on public broadcasting, PBS. Because the show was so clean, we wouldn't say anything commercial on it. What I would say is, the Kiwanis Club is promoting the show that we're going to be at in Selwood, Washington next Wednesday, and we're going to give part of the proceeds of that show to this charitable organization. They're a 501c3, so we wish you people to get there. You can get tickets and such and such. So they couldn't knock us for saying that, say.
Right. So was you in the Portland office, or are you just the stuff up in Washington?
No, I was. I ran Elton's territory. Finally, I started running all of Elton's towns. Only town that Don actually ran, if you want to call it running it, was Portland, and I ran all the Washington towns, and I helped with the book in British Columbia for a while.
That Washington territory up there was, Seattle all up in there, man, it was something, man.
Yeah, we had 56 straight sellouts in Yakima. That's every second week. Remember on Monday nights we go to Jam Perry over there, the place would be jammed.
Yes.
Yeah, and then Tacoma, the Bicentennial Pavilion. Every once in a while, we run at the ice hockey arena in Spokane. Oh yeah, those were the days.
Why didn't he go downtown in Portland?
What's that?
Special show in Portland. Why didn't he go downtown?
We went to a larger building only a couple of times at the PIR out at the fairgrounds. We never went. He only ran one show in the Coliseum, and he was afraid of that because he didn't like the pre-sale. I said, Don, they're going to be a ton of walk-ins. Just run the show, and you take the money and run. He did.
That's a tremendous talent out there, too. A lot of people, I guess it's like, I kind of look at that area like the Gulf Coast was back in the early 70s. There was a lot of guys that homesteaded there because of the work situation, the short trips, and the money was good and everything. But
I was just listening to say that very word, homestead, because I know when I got there, he said, Don told me, I don't want you coming out here homesteading like the rest of these guys.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing about the rest of those guys. The rest of those guys, when they first come into that territory, didn't have a pot to pee in. We made our boys. They went to school. They went to school on the promoter and the business, and I ran it like a business, not a circus.
Well, I know one thing. I mean, you know what I liked about that territory, Dutch? I mean, everybody got a chance.
Right.
Everybody out there was good talent, and it, like Jesse and I'd be on the main events.
Yeah.
And then, do our thing, and then we'd go back down below and come
right
back up again. I mean, everybody, it wasn't a deal where you resented it because you were still making money.
Did you notice that guy that was on top out there by the name of Savage did jobs for all of you? Remember that? Anybody who would come in that looked like they were worth their salt, their first match would be with me. If you remember, your first match out there was a preliminary match at a one-fall 20-minute time limit. You went Broadway with me?
Yes.
And what did I say to you before the match was over?
You
I backed you into
that
a corner, and I whispered, money in the bank, boy.
We had it made, man. I loved it. My wife and I still talk about that place. We loved it.
Well, we had our eye on you right away because you were going to be our top baby, and then you take off on us. You would have ended up being tag team partner with my partner Snuka because I was getting ready to get out of the ring.
Well, I had a run there. I mean, y'all took care of me. I you're one of the few guys I can say that when I went in there, I was went in there and y'all took care of me. I can't complain. I've never knocked Portland, Oregon.
Well, I told who was it one night? Elton says, boy, you sure like that Oates fella. I said, yeah. I said, I can't help it. He's the only guy in the territory that's prettier than me.
But Bobby and Mike,
the guy that's a, what's the guy's name there on the mic with you, Stan or Steve or
Mike and Bobby?
Mike.
The guy that's on the microphone there with you.
That's Mike.
Mike, you have to understand, Jerry was just as cute as a button. All the girls just adored him. He had curly hair and that southern drawl, and they just melted when they saw him. He didn't even have to get in the ring if he won.
But I was going to tell them, that's Bobby and Mike, the talent from, out there, the opening match could be a main event.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. We sent New York their very first champion, Snuka, and then we sent him Piper after that. But the way I made guys work, if you remember correctly, if you were in the preliminary match, I tell you before you go out there, I want a main event out of you tonight. And I would tell you, I don't want any meat chopping. Let's keep it in the center of the ring and work your buns off. Make them want more. And every one of the guys would follow up because I was paying them.
It was unbelievable. I've never seen a territory with that much talent. I mean, it was kind of like Georgia and Georgia's that day. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
It all depends on how you book the thing. I never booked to have one or two guys on top forever. I would always have an underneath card that was ready to step in at any minute to give the guys on top a rest, and that way we wouldn't have to hot shot the territory all the time. That's why there was very few gimmick matches out here.
That's the way it worked. I mean, I don't know who come up with that theory of working it that way, but I mean, and all the boys got along. Everybody got along. It was a sweet place to work.
Well, you remember me being in all the towns with you, don't you?
Yes, sir.
I wonder who was working all those schedules.
I used to ride.
Now, that shouldn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. And I'm not patting myself on the back. I just took care of my business.
Well, I mean, that's the way it should have been. I mean, you know, you see guys that ran towns, promoted towns, wasn't even in the town.
That's wrong.
That's dead wrong.
You want to kill a town? Let the boys themselves run a town for the night. You'll have 15 gimmick matches the next week. Then what are you going to follow the Second World War with? The Third World War doesn't work that way.
There you go.
You book your territory 3 to 4 months down the road, and you stick to your agenda. You stick to your agenda, you'll keep making straight money. You try to go off the schedule, you'll blow the whole thing up.
Well, you know, my thinking is, you know, not just because of our heyday, four of us on the line tonight, but what goes on today, they couldn't run a town weekly.
No. It's a joke, and they have this international and national television. That's where they're making their money. And a lot of these towns that McMahon's runs, that where they televise is from, a lot of those people get in free, so they'll have a full house to show the television audience.
That's what I've heard. The papers look down.
Yeah, he pads it. That simple. If you remember correctly, we didn't have too many muscleheads during our day.
No.
And nobody knew what Diana Ball was.
It was just good. It was.
We had some fantabulous athletes working for us.
Well, y'all, you know, you ran it right. That's the whole thing. That it was run right. You know, the it was seen about. That was the whole thing.
Well, it was a job. I'd work my bippy off to get everything going all week long, and I come in and Donna tried to tear it down. What happened, Donald got to be almost afraid of me, thought I was going to take over the territory on him. I didn't want anything to do with taking over the territory. I just wanted to have a good living, do what I do best, and then just manipulate the talent. That's all I wanted to do, but he couldn't get that through his thick head. Greed spoils you.
Yep. Well, at that time, he couldn't have a better person out there. I'll tell you that.
That's nice of you.
I
appreciate that, Jerry.
I really enjoyed it. I only regret one thing. I can't do it again. I wish we could do it one more time, really.
That's what Kaninsky said to me just before he passed on here a few months ago. He said, Dutch, he says, you know the one thing I'm going to miss the most? I said, what's that, Dean? He says, not being able to do this one or two more times.
That's it.
Yeah, he was 77.
I'd love to make that Portland run one more time.
Yeah. Well, I sure miss
you. We've got a caller on the line from, I want to get on the line with us, see if they've got a question for Dutch or Jerry or Bobby or somebody. Hang on just a second, let me get them on the line.
All right.
From Jacksonville, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike. It's
Jeff. Jeff, what's going on?
Not too much. I'm just enjoying the show.
From the Southeastern Territory.
Well, yeah, a little bit. I was going to ask Jerry, and then I wanted to ask Doug something if I could. But you too, Mike. You remember when I used to run the website for Gulf Coast, Southeastern, and Continental?
Yes.
And we did the greatest feud in the history of Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be Ricky Gibson against Bobby Shane.
Yeah.
You remember that? And
yes,
some way I learned that actually Dean Silverstone ran that same feud up in Washington. I guess he ran Eastern Washington.
Where did he run? I know he ran Seattle, right? Before you did?
Are you talking to me now?
Yeah, Dean Silverstone. Where all did he run?
Yeah, Dean took over after Harry Elliott had desecrated the territory and was down to $15, $20 payoffs. Nobody would work up there. Dean got television tape over in Yakima, and he started running some towns in Washington. He did pretty well for the talent that he had. The talent wasn't that much, but for what he did a pretty good job. And when we decided to go in and take all of our stuff in there, he had to fold his tent real quick.
Because
I know he used Bobby Shane out there. He used a lot of the Gulf Coast guys. Eddie Sullivan, Rip Tyler, Ricky Gibson worked up there.
Yeah.
A few
of his guys came into Mobile. I know Lumberjack Dupree worked there. Who else did he have? Dwayne Bailey worked in Tennessee as Donnie Anderson. He worked for us for a while, or for Mobile for a while. So there was a little bit of a talent swap there.
Well, you take those guys that you're just mentioning and you put them up against a Don Leo Jonathan, a Jimmy Snuka, an Apache Bull Ravens, a Stan Stasiak, a Dutch Savage, a Jerry Oates, a Jay Youngblood, Adrian Adonis, Ringo Starr, and a few other, Rick Starr, and a few others, and compare the two talents. Well, who would you rather book?
It seems kind of equal to me because I grew up on some of those other guys. I'm sorry, not to be an insult, Mr. Savage, but you know.
You're not being insulting. I'm just quoting fact. You just can't. When you have superior talent, the other talent's going to have to fade away because they can't compete with it.
Right. Hey, Mr. Oates, are you
yes,
still
sir.
There? Yeah,
yes,
your brother worked for Ron Fuller for quite often, and I don't remember you coming in to Southeastern too often. Was there a reason why you didn't come and work for Ron?
Down in Mobile?
Yes, sir.
I can answer that for him because nobody would come by and pick him up. That's why.
That might have something to do with it. Well, I'll tell you, Dutch don't even know this. The reason I wound up in Oregon, I was wrestling Harley Race in St. Louis.
You were?
And we're in the middle of the ring in New Orleans. In New Orleans, not St. Louis, in New Orleans. And he said, man, you need to go to Portland. He said, they want you out there. I said, they don't even know me. He said, yeah, they do. He said, give them a call. So the next morning, went to his room, and we called and set it up. So I went back to Georgia and sold my van, and my wife and I shipped a lot of stuff out there to Jesse's house. Jesse Ventura, him and his wife picked it up for us. And we got on a plane, left Columbus, Georgia at 10 o'clock that night, and we got to Portland, Oregon the next morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. Didn't have a car or anything. And Jesse and his wife met us, and he was going to Hawaii for a few days. So we stayed with Jesse, and Jesse got back, and I bought me a car, and I stayed out there and had my run, and I loved it. A lot of people wouldn't have done that. Got on a plane and took off, my wife and I.
Right. Go ahead. I'm not meaning
that. No, that was it. I mean, it was worth it. Every bit of it was worth it.
Okay. And one more question for Mr. Savage. I seen this one fight you have with Bull Ramos, the famous coal miner's glove match.
Uh-huh.
No, that one was with the Iron Sheik.
Oh, you saw the one on the PBS special, the documentary.
Yes, sir.
That's on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
I seen it years ago on. I had a videotape that my machine ate. So I don't have it anymore. But
do you think I sold him enough? Do you think I sold the Sheik enough to make him look good?
That was intense. That was really good. I was never a big Iron Sheik fan, but because I thought he was a little too stiff, not as smooth in the ring as everybody said he was.
You did that right.
But that match, I tell you what, that match right there was proof positive, and that was even with Bull Ramos trying to interfere, it didn't take away from the match. And then to follow up on one thing that you said about booking your territory months in advance, I know for a fact, I'm going to say that what I was told by others in the business that work for Ron Fuller, that he would actually book his territory almost a year in advance. I don't know. Is that true?
Remo Williams in disguise.
I can't say. Ron booked differently. He had a way of booking. When Dutch talks about booking months in advance, and when Bob Kelly was booking the Mobile territory, what they did is they worked, each week, in each town a different way. If you remember the way Fuller booked, Fuller, other than Pensacola, Fuller used the same matches, same lineup, same finishes in every town that he ran every week, except Pensacola, and that's only because Pensacola was so close to Mobile that fans could drive over there. In other words, when I worked for him, every match I worked, I ended up, we had the same finish, went the same length of time. We were on the card at the same time, Monday night in Birmingham, Tuesday night in Mobile, Wednesday night in Montgomery. It was the same thing. And so I can see, not to take away from, number one, he rarely booked anyway. It was either Armstrong or Robert that was booking. And they seem to swap off every 4 or 5 months. So I don't see how they could have, he may have had plans down the road as to what he was doing, but I don't think he actually booked it all the way out that way. I mean, it's hard to go that far out because of somebody getting hurt, somebody leaving the territory, something, there's too many variables there that will allow him to book that.
So the max you can possibly go is about 3 to 4 months.
Three or four months.
And then you have to improvise sometimes because the way the boys are, we have to wipe their noses and change their diapers for them. You got to get into the arena on time. You got to get into towns on time.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's a screw up, so you have to be prepared for it.
But there's one thing about you guys out there, Dutch.
You ever notice, Mike, that Ron, if you screwed him over, you never got booked by him again. So all those guys that left him in Knoxville, they never made it to Mobile. And then Jerry Lawler worked for him in Knoxville for a couple weeks, and then he no-showed. And Ron never brought Lawler down to Mobile.
He was just like most, the smaller territories. They had core guys that you knew you could build a territory around. You think as far back as when Lee Fields had Mobile. I mean, he built his territory around his brothers, Bobby and Ken Lucas, Kelly, Boyette, guys that he knew were going to be there, day in and day out.
Yeah.
Because they were loyal because he took care of them. Ron was the same way. I mean, he had not only his brother and his cousin, Jimmy Golden, but he had, his other family relatives he could work, Jackie and Roy Lee Welch. He had the Fields cousins. He had, everybody there. Plus, the Mobile territory had some, when he opened up there, there were so many guys that had lived there for so long, Sullivan and Tyler and, guys like that, Baxter, that, he could use them if he had to. Billy Spears was pretty much a regular there. So
you guys are forgetting about one promoter down there that nobody ever mentions. Eddie Graham.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, Eddie was further down in Florida.
Right. Well, he was quite a manipulator.
Oh yeah.
Please.
He was one of the best.
Yes, he was.
One of the best.
Yeah. Well, I heard he was kind of could be Nick Gulish like in his payoff.
No, Eddie was pretty straight Joe. He was a pretty straight Joe. You don't want to pay attention to the boys. The only thing the boys know is when their next check is coming. And they're only as loyal as their next check. Am I right or wrong, Jerry?
That's it.
Yeah.
The thing is, they don't like to hear the truth, see? If it was up to the boys, all the territories would be running to the ground in 2 weeks.
Right.
But, this gentleman was talking about, the matches were the same and every town. When you guys ran it out there, every town was different every night.
You have to do that in a small territory. You have to do that because you got these arena rats that follow you from town to town to town.
And it was different.
They know what a newspaper is,
You could be on the main event Saturday night in Portland, and you'd be on the third match in Yakima Monday.
That's it.
That's the way
name of the game. But everybody made good money.
Nobody said anything. I was on the main event Monday, Saturday night, and I'm on the third match the next night. Nobody said anything.
No.
It was wonderful.
They might have said something in the car, Jerry, but they never said anything to me.
It was a unique place. It was one of the most unique territories I ever worked.
How'd you like working with him? Did you get a chance to work with Lonnie while you were out here?
With who?
Lonnie, Maine.
The only place I worked with Lonnie wasn't there when I was there. I worked with Lonnie in Louisiana.
In Louisiana. There was a good hand. You enjoyed working with Lonnie.
Yeah, I did. I had some great.
You matches. Just stand in the center of the ring and he'll work around you. and have people on the ring apron.
I worked with him in Shreveport, and he left Shreveport, and he got killed 3 months later.
Yeah, what had happened? Lonnie got into his greatest thing in the world was getting into a Southern Comfort after the matches were over.
Yes,
and he would come to the matches there towards the end of his life when he had trouble with his missus. God rest him, and the income tax because he was smashed most of the time. Then he went to L.A. and didn't like it there, and that's when he took his Corvette and ran it across the freeway into that semi. Decapitated him from the waist up.
Is that right?
Yeah, and Lonnie Maine was one heck of a neat kid. Really a neat kid.
I love working with him.
Yeah, he was unique in the business. He had the gimmick down that he had down perfect. Nobody else, they could imitate him, but they couldn't duplicate him.
Is Waskowski still out in Portland?
He's in Arizona.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, he was at that thing up here last Monday.
Oh, was he?
Hey, Dust, this is Bobby Simmons. I've been sitting here listening. I'm learning. I'm being educated. I worked down in the southern end here. I worked for I went to work running errands for Charlie Harbin back in 1968, and I spent most of my time here. But you mentioned Lonnie Maine, and I've told these guys this story, but you might appreciate this. We used to work Columbus TV on Saturday afternoons for Mr. Ward, and it was live. It went from 4 to 5.
Yeah.
And we left there, and we went back to Carrollton, Georgia, or to Griffin, Georgia. Both of them was about 40 miles from Atlanta, one on the south end, one on the east end.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going home for Christmas. The only time we closed down was the week of Christmas. And that Saturday night we were finishing up. So somewhere between Columbus and Carrollton, Lonnie had stopped and had a few, and he was pretty well lit.
Yeah.
And he was in the main event, and he was working with Dickie Slater, and he slammed Slater, and he climbed up on the top rope. And I turned to tell him to get down, and as I turned to look at him, he fell like a tree backwards.
Oh, boy.
His knees never bent. He just timber all the way to the floor. I turned around and looked at Slater laying on the mat, and Slater looked at me and said, "He's dead." And I was afraid to go look, and I went over, and he was so drunk, when I got over and looked over the ropes, he was laying on the floor laughing. And he looked up at me just as serious, and he said, "Bobby, would you please count me out?" So I did, and we went home.
Jerry?
Yes, sir.
Jerry, I got a Lonnie story for you. Ready? Now, legend has it. See, I'm not too sure about this, but legend has it. Remember Professor Fuji, don't you, Harry Fujiwara?
Yes.
He worked in New York for a while after he left us. Well, he and I were part of the Rat Pack in Hawaii with courtesy Alkia and Ripper Collins. Anyway, legend has it that Fuji used to like to drink some Southern Comfort with Lonnie. So Fuji was always pulling ribs on us. You know, he'd take our new suit pants and tie them in knots in the dressing room. We'd come in and it'd be all wrinkled up and everything else because we had a thing going on where you're wearing suits at one time. And you'd come in, you'd find one of your shoes, brand new shoes, nailed to the floor. Fuji just laugh about it, but we couldn't swear he was doing it. But we knew he was because the other guys would rat on him. Anyway, we went to Medford. And you know how Medford is. Medford is about the longest strip in the territory, 240 miles. We went to Medford and got him pretty well south going down. They got him pretty well south going down there on Southern Comfort. And he was managing somebody that night anyway. We left him in the dressing room with another half pint. And he finished that off, evidently, because he got in the car coming home with Lonnie. And legend has it that Lonnie used to like to shoot birds down the Rogue River Valley on Rogue River. If he'd leave early and shoot birds, he had a 20-gauge in the trunk, and he kept a little rubber raft in there that he'd go out and get the ducks after he shot them. Anyway, they get back to Portland, and Fuji's passed out in the back seat. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. So they stop there on McLaughlin Boulevard across from this great big elderly folks home, about 10 stories tall and about two city blocks, and it has a great big concrete pond with geese in it and flowers and trees and everything around, and the geese are quacking and the ducks are in there. About 3 o'clock in the morning, they take and get Fuji out of the back of the car. He's passed out, laying down the lawn. They pump up the little rubber raft, and they take all the clothes off of Fuji and put him in the raft. And then they take the shotgun and put it across his lap and pushed him out in the pond. He was passed out. About 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, here comes the elderly people out for their morning constitutional, walking around the pond, admiring the flowers, and they see this big Japanese blimp in a rubber raft with the ducks and the geese all quacking around him, so they call the police. So the police came, you get out of the middle of that pond, and Fuji wasn't even awake. Finally, one of the guys in his dress blues had to wade out in his pants. They pulled him in out of that rubber raft, took him to jail. You know, they never would, he was naked, too. Then, you know, Fuji wouldn't talk to us for about 2 months after that. I can't imagine why.
But I believe it.
But that's legend has it, see.
Yeah, I understand. Like you wasn't up with it either, right? Sounds like you might have had a hand in that one.
Oh, I'm innocent. I'm innocent.
Yes, sure you are.
Well, you remember in those days, I didn't give a darn about anything in those days. Nothing really bothered me. But when I found Christ in 1982, finally pulled myself together and after a nasty divorce, I accepted Christ and started studying, and I found out that the Scriptures wrote history, not history of the Scriptures. And that's been my life ever since then.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, bouncing back to your time in Georgia, I came across a name that you teamed with quite a bit, Dutch, and Jerry, before your time in the business, but having grown up in Columbus and everything, I'm wondering if you ever saw this guy work, and it's Bob Morrow.
Bobby Morrow, the black wrestler?
No, he was
white.
Well, he was white. I knew a Bob Morrow that was black.
I think you're thinking Jerry Morrow.
Jerry Morrow, is that who I'm thinking of?
Jerry and Eddie Morrow, yeah, the Ethical Brothers.
Huh. Bob Morrow sounds awful familiar.
Yeah, he was a tall, thin, had a crew cut. The newspaper said he was a former Army champion. He was around about the same time Bob Eisenberg was. Jerry, remember you and I talked about him?
Yeah.
So Morrow may have been also still in the military and based there in Fort Benning and may have been working for Fred Ward because he just worked Fred Ward's towns in Columbus, and he worked. He came through Mobile briefly.
Huh.
But,
well, there's a lot of guys like Cilantro Rodriguez and the Hineses and a few other people that I remember worked for Fred. I don't remember too many more of them.
That crew you're talking about there, Mike, that's when Fred went on his own when he pulled away from Atlanta.
Yeah, he was opposition to Atlanta.
Right.
You mentioned Cilantro Rodriguez, and I've been meaning to say this for the last few shows that we've been on. He lost his wife, I guess it's been three or four weeks ago now.
Oh,
my. His wife passed away. Yeah.
Oh,
geez. Oh, my.
Where's he living?
Yep. He's in Texas, somewhere in Texas.
Huh.
They were, when was it, 2 years ago, Bobby, they were in Mobile?
Two years ago, they were in a reunion in Mobile, yes.
Is Don Larson still around? Remember Don Larson?
Don Larson or Don Carson?
Oh, Don Carson, rather. That's it. Don Carson.
Carson, yes. He is in San Antonio, and he is in the early stages of Alzheimer's.
Oh, for pity's sakes. Yep. Yeah, he was just breaking into business then. He had the blonde-haired gimmick then. Big, tall, slender fella. Nice guy.
Dutch, was you around Cilantro much?
Only in the ring.
He was the noisiest man in the dressing room I've ever been around. I swear. He'd run everybody crazy. Nice guy, though. Nice guy.
Yeah, he was a good kid. He was a good worker.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Well, you teamed with Mario Galento.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've got some stories to tell on him.
Oh, yeah. It's not nice to speak ill of the dead.
You're so kind now, Dutch.
There was a guy, Dale was in Atlanta, the same time I was in Atlanta, and there was a guy that challenged, they had a challenge going on, who was it that's helping book there? Was it Lee Fields or somebody was helping book? I don't know. Anyway, but Ray Gunkel and his partner had Dale do this beat the champ thing. So they had this guy challenge him. And the guy, black-haired fellow, I forget what his name was, but he looked like a pretty strong kid. And he challenged Dale. They got out in the center of the ring. The kid came running out there with an American flag on him. The crowd was all cheering him and everything. And Dale was standing there, you know, with his usual athletic jacket on with the American flag and everything on it. And the kid slapped Dale. Now, you have to be either completely insane or one oar in the water to attack a man by the name of Dale Lewis. You've got to be really out of it. I don't care who you are. Well, Dale never said a word. He just turned to his corner. Looked back at the dressing room, wiped his feet off the mat. I've never seen him wipe his feet off on the mat before. Took off his sweater, turned around, and the guy charged him. The referee, so he charged him. Dale sidestepped the guy. The guy charged him and sidestepped him. Dale picked him up like a nickel, drove him headfirst into the mat, and then surreptitiously continued to break one of his ankles for him. The guy was screaming. He just went down, got a hold of the leg, and just turned the ankle the wrong way. The guy screamed and started cussing. Dale broke his wrist. And then the guy stopped screaming and cussing him. He just started screaming. And that was the end of it. I'll never forget that. That just now flashed into my mind. That was on one of the big shows there in Atlanta. It was a prelim match.
I was just take this the way I intended. I was just a kid going to the matches. I remember the guy jumping in a ring that night and challenging him. Had a towel on it, had a flag on it, and he made the comment. I remember Ed Caprell was the announcer, and he told Ed Caprell Dale was wrestling somebody. They had the deal going where whoever he worked with, if they beat him within 30 minutes, they got $1,000.
Right.
And he challenged Dale that night, and he said he may not have the money after he wrestles whoever he was wrestling that night. And Dale, I didn't know the story about the broke bones, but.
Yeah.
I remember the guy with the flag jumping in a ring.
Yeah, he lasted about a total of 1 minute.
Oh yeah, it wasn't long at all.
Yeah, it was. You could hear that one. You could hear the ankle all the way back in the dressing room. The guys were just going, "Oh!" Everybody's standing out there watching on the stage way back. Yeah, man.
Oh.
Jeez. I said this a couple of weeks ago when we had Bill Dundee on the show with us. He was talking about a Mark jumped up in the ring and slapped David Schultz. I said, it never fails. They always pick the worst ones that they could possibly pick to mess with. And I can imagine Dale Lewis would be one of them on that.
No.
The guy that,
is Stretch Phillips still alive?
No.
No, he passed away a few years ago. Well, we lost a lot of them in the past few years, man.
Oh.
Yeah.
Lost a lot of them.
Tom Burke, our friend out of, where's Tom at, Mike, up in Boston or Connecticut?
He's in Massachusetts, yeah.
He does an All Saints letter every year of guys that were in the business, that were associated with the business or close, and he sends me, I appreciate your testimony. I pastor a Baptist church in Atlanta. He sends Yes. He sends me his All Saints letter every year that he does for his Catholic faith. And 77 names were on it last year. And out of those 77 names, 40 of them I either knew personally or had been in the ring with. And I just, it absolutely breaks my heart. It breaks my heart.
For pity's sake. Huh. Amazing. So you're a pastor of a Baptist church, huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I thought the people were the church. You're talking about the building or the church?
No, we're the people.
Where two or more of you gather in my name, there am I in the midst of you. That's the church. You and I are the church. Oh, by the way, Pastor, I don't remember Jesus Christ or any of his apostles ever receiving a salary for what they did. Do you?
No, sir. And I don't get a salary either.
Well, here's the thing. You know what the tithe is supposed to be used for? The tithe is supposed to be used only for the minister to be ministry to be given to the widows and the poor. Well, they sure made a mockery out of that, haven't they?
Haven't they?
Have you ever watched some of these people on television?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever watched some of these guys on television?
Yes, sir.
All they ask for is money. Now, show me that in the book of Malachi where you're supposed to ask for money all the time.
Yeah,
Jerry, there's something you didn't know about me. I spent 30 years and I have a PhD in divinity. I studied the Greek and the Hebraic, I found out that, like I told you, the Bible wrote history, not history of the Bible. And if you'll check out histrionic days and dates and what Christ actually did, Yeshua, what he actually did Hebraically, you'll find out it's a lot different what they're telling you about the traditions in the various churches. There's no such word in the Bible by the name of denomination. There's no Lutheran, there's no Baptist, there's no Catholic, there's no Episcopalians. There's one faith, one baptism, one Lord Jesus Christ overall. So how come there's 324 different denominations?
I have with the whole thing, Dutch. You know,
it's called money,
believer,
honey.
I'm a believer, and and these churches break off from one another and start another one, and it just goes on and on and on. And
it's all about money.
It's all about
like Mark 7:7. These are they which teach for commandments the traditions of men. Ooh, better tear that page out, huh?
It's like the guy that was marooned on the island, and they find him, and they walk up on the beach, and they say, "Man, we're glad we found you." And the guy goes, "Yeah, man, I've been here for years." And he said, "Let me show you where I was living." He said, "See this hut over here?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "That's my church." He said, "That's where I worship." And they said, "That's great." He said, "What's that other hut over?" I said, "It sort of looks like that one." He said, "Oh, that's the church I go to now." He said, "I got mad at the verse when I went to this one."
That's right.
That's the way, you know.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, I'd love to see you again. We could compare notes on what you're doing, the work you're doing, versus what we're doing out here. We have about, I'd say 40 different home churches, home groups throughout the Pacific Northwest. We've withdrawn from organized religion completely. If you remember correctly, the last thing that Jesus said 3 days before they assassinated him, his own church of his own day, the church that he set up through Abraham and the rest of them, he looked down on Jerusalem, standing on the hill outside of Jerusalem. He said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem," that's the prophetic church of his day,
mm-hmm.
said, "You who have slain all the prophets, all the preachers that I have sent unto you, how I would love to gather you together as a mother hen gathers her chicks to her breast, but you, Jerusalem, would have none of me." Next yep. sentence, they don't repeat it in churches too often. "From this day forward, your house is left unto you desolate." He took his Holy Spirit away from the Jewish dispensation, gave it to the Gentile world, and look what we've done with it.
Yep.
Exactly.
By the way, are the Jews having any fun over there yet? They're all backed up against the sea, just like the Book of Isaiah said they would be, aren't they?
Yep.
Yep.
And scattered all over the world. We're very close, Jerry.
I know that, Dutch.
Nothing worse than a preacher preaching to a preacher, isn't it?
I've been here listening all night.
Yeah.
What years were you actually in Georgia, Dutch?
Oh, I think 1811, just before Jackson fought that war.
Yeah.
Probably in, what, 63, 64, somewhere around there.
Okay.
You were that far back. I know you met Charlie Smith then.
Oh.
I remember Jerry and Nick Kozak were in Atlanta at that time, and they were working in the Atlanta office, and I saw them work when I was working in Columbus. I went to one of their shows in Macon, and I forget most of the guys we had there because we had such a hodgepodge group there in Macon. Choo Choo Lin was there, and Al Galeno.
Like
who else was some of the other guys?
Jesse James was
yeah, there. And Grady was there. Graham.
Yeah, Graham.
Oh, I forget who else was there.
What's the guy's name from
you broke
Alabama.
Up on that one.
There was a football Mark player from Ball. Alabama. Tarzan White?
Tarzan White, yeah.
He was there.
Yeah, I remember a little guy who wore the mask there, Frankie Kane?
Yeah.
Frankie Kane, yeah.
Frankie Kane came in to work for us a couple of times. And some Abe Freeman. There's a couple of guys that I remember. It's a long time ago. My stars.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm 77 now. How old are you now, Jerry?
I'll be 64 next month.
64. One more day, one more year, you'd be eligible for retirement.
Yeah.
64. You're getting up there, young fella.
Names.
You know, and you look back, and you say, where'd it go? Where did it go?
Yeah, it's just like the Bible. The Bible tells you life is nothing but a vapor.
That's all it is.
That's it.
That's all it is.
What you do between point A and point B is your probation. And what you do with your mind and heart, you must be transformed by the renewing of your mind. What you do with your mind and heart between point A and point B, that tells you whether you're going to make it into the kingdom or not. Anybody can say, I'm saved, I found Jesus. Anybody can say that. But they forget about the O word in the Bible. It's called obedience. What do I know? Because if that's the case, if all you have to do is say you're saved and you love Jesus, well, Hitler's going to be there. He was a Roman Catholic. Stalin was a Russian Orthodox Catholic. Read your history books. Make a liar out of me. If they're going to be there, I ain't going.
Nope.
One of the things that we do each week, Dutch, is I always pick a name out of the past. We were just throwing out names a few minutes ago. I always pick out ones to try and stir Bobby and Jerry's memories, and I picked one that I know you worked with in Oklahoma a little bit in 1970, and he was in and out of Georgia several times, and that's Swede Carlson. You guys remember him?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I remember Swede was my tag team partner there in Oklahoma.
Was it? Yeah.
Did you know that?
He was a strange
Yeah, Swede
no,
was
I,
my
I,
Swede, Talkie Ben Carlson.
He was.
His name was.
I was just going to say, I was running errands for Charlie Harbin in '68, and I remember Gunkel going crazy in the office one day because Swede came to the ring in Atlanta with a jacket on that had 3 K's on the back of it.
He was a real character. His real name is Talgy Bank Carlson, and he would talk like, I'm going to Japan to wrestle the reps, you know. He's a great big fellow. He's about 6'4", 6'5", and weighed about 270, 275. He didn't care at all for promoters. Didn't like promoters. But he had a heart as big as your foot.
he was something else to work with. I'll give him credit for that, man. Good.
Very convincing, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
I had to work a single match against him when I first went in there for McGurk. And he got in me pretty good. And I said, after the thing was over, he says, "How about your thing?" I said, "Well, do me a favor next time. Would you, Sweet?" He said, "What's that?" I says, "Convince the people, not me."
Exactly.
He just stared at me. He said, "Did I hurt you?" I says, "Only when you breathe." And that was it.
He was something else, man. I guess
yeah.
He's been gone a while, huh?
Yeah, he's been gone for quite a while.
He was living in Griffin, Georgia, I think, when he died.
He cut a leg
no
off kidding.
With a chainsaw. Working on
oh
a little
my.
Place he had down there.
Huh.
Yeah, I think I probably told Jerry and Mike this. We were in Warner Robins, Georgia one night, and Swede used to drive he drove a Jeep Wrangler before it was popular to drive a Jeep Wrangler. And it was
well, he got one of those big Chevy four wheel drivers too. What do they call them? Those old Chevy square looking things.
But he had the top down on this Jeep thing, and he had his dog with him. And he pulled up out behind the building, and he stopped and got out, and he left the keys in. And the dog was sitting in the Jeep, and I was sitting on a little load dock there. Me and Tom Ernesto was sitting there, and Ernesto told him, he said, "Hey, Sweet," he said, "you left your keys." He said, "Oh, the dog's in there." He said, "Well, nobody mess with that thing." So Ernesto handed me $10 and said, "Go up to the concession stand." He said, "Buy me all the hot dogs you can buy for $10. And I came back down there, and Tom sat there and took the weenies out of those hot dogs, and he started flipping them to that dog. And after about 5 weenies, he had the dog eating out of his hand. And he climbed in that
right.
Jeep and started it up, was riding around the parking lot blowing the horn. And needless to say, the big Swede was a little irate.
Well, guys, we got another caller, and I recognize this number. This is probably somebody that I know wants to talk to you, Duchess, or somebody you worked with quite a bit back in your early days in Georgia. Let me get him on the line with us. Mr. Steinborn, are you there?
I sure am.
We got Dutch Savage on the line.
Who is this?
I figured he...
This is Dick Steinborn.
Oh, for pity's sakes, Richard. My stars in heaven. How are you?
Good. I got to tell you one story about Dutch Savage. We're on a trip to Japan for 6 weeks. And at nighttime, after you get through wrestling, you go back to the little paper hotel, and you get into the hot tub, and you drink some beer and so forth. And when you check out the next morning, you're supposed to pay for the beer. Well, Dutch evidently forgot. Wait a minute. And I guess these little hotels were sister hotels. So about the third hotel, we were ready to check out, and Doug says, "I got to go to the bathroom soon." And those toilets over there on the first floor, and all on the first floor, was nothing but a hole on the ground. So you had a little door there, and you had a little handles, and you just, you know, you squatted down. That was the tradition over there. So we went to check out, and Dutch says, "I got to go to the bathroom." So it's like 6:30 in the morning. Aguchi's got us up to take a train someplace. So he goes and takes the bathroom. So when I go to check out, the woman comes up to me. She holds up a little bill, and you could see a space from the last hotel and spaced again from the last hotel. And it's got the yin on there, and she's really hot at me. Savage. I says, "Come with me." And I took her from behind the counter, and I walked over to the toilet, and I opened up the door. And those Japanese, they don't care anything about that. She reaches in there, and he squatted down, one bad leg and one good leg, and he's squatting there, and she's got this thing in his face saying, "All right, all right, shut the door, let me get through." I stood back and looked at her. I said, "That should be on film."
I remember that. You taught her. I thought she said, "Fend 10,000 yen, please, and hand me the bill, stuck it in my face, and I'm there doing my business in this trench on the floor.
What was really funny, she was mad. She didn't care what you were doing. She was hot.
I had forgotten all about that, for pity's sake. My stars. Dickie, how in the world are you?
Good. I'll be 78 years of age next month, and I live in Richmond, Virginia.
For pity's sake.
Yeah, there was a different life,
I'll be dipped
in
snuff. Oh, it's a different life, a different time. It's amazing. I hadn't heard anything about you for years, and this is great. I'm glad to get to talk to you. My stars. I've got 10 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren.
Good.
I've got a wife that adores me that I've been with for years and years and years. We live out here. We have a farm out here in the hills of Southwest Washington. I don't know if Mount St. Helens.
Are you a preacher?
Huh?
Are you a preacher?
Well, I'm a minister.
Minister? What's the difference between a minister?
Yeah,
and a preacher?
I was an evangelist for almost 20 years, went all over the nation preaching and teaching.
Really?
And then I settled down and got into this area, and some fool ordained me. I don't know why one of the churches wanted to ordain me, so they ordained me. The church is what they know. They don't know. They're crazy.
You know, Bobby also is a minister. Is that what you call him, Bobby? A minister?
I'm a pastor of the church.
Pastor.
Or that little flock I got.
I can feel the heat already coming.
Oh, please.
You know, my dad.
I talked to Nick Kozak, who's still alive, you know.
Yeah, Dad,
he's in Texas, and Jerry just lost his wife here about 6 months ago.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. I hate to hear that.
Yeah.
Nick and Jerry.
Yeah, he's pretty shook up still about it.
Out of here.
I hear Carl Cox is still around. I don't know where he is.
Carl Gotch?
He's in Texas.
Carl Cox.
Oh, Carl Cox. Killer Carl Cox.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
He's in Dallas.
Herb Gerwig.
Dallas.
Yeah, he's in Dallas.
I told this story before, but you get a kick out of this, Dutch. When I first met Killer Carl Cox, it was in Houston, Texas. He comes off the stage with this T-shirt, with this sweatshirt on, with KKK on it. I'm saying, what the hell? Texas wrestling to me was just this. As far as I'm concerned, all the wrestling across the United States, Texas was by itself. It was different. Every time you went there, it was something. The people loved it. It was just magic. He goes off the stage, walks into the ring in Houston, Texas. He looks up in the balcony. It's a black section up there. And he reaches down in his tights, and he pulls out his imaginary hand grenade. He puts it up to his mouth,
yeah.
And he pulls the pin. And he reaches back, and he puts his left arm out like Hulk Hogan does, and he waits. And I looked up at the balcony, and they're scattering. They're moving. And he throws this imaginary big. And when he goes up there, they all scatter, and you know, they move back a little bit. They don't know if he's going to do it or not. And he stands in the middle of the ring and puts his hands over his ears, and as if the hand grenade went off 10 seconds later, he makes a little bit of a bounce, like boom, like he moves his body up and down. He says, oh, my God. It's Texas wrestling. That's before the match starts. Killer Carl Cox.
Yeah. Yeah, Carl was a completely different situation. Carl was, always has been. And Killer Carl Cox, KKK. My tag team partner, when I was with him in Texas, I was with Carl in Amarillo and also in the Dallas-Fort Worth territory. Was the Mexican fellow, the big one, Lalo. My mind is going on me.
No,
Cyclone
Negro. Romero.
You got the right
territory. Cyclone Negro, yeah. So there you go. Cyclone Negro, Cyclone, Lalo. Well, he was a worker. He could really work.
How long was you in the business, Dutch?
Me?
Yeah. How many years?
Oh, 27 or 28 before I started promoting.
Wow. How'd you do with the promotion?
How'd I do what?
How did you do with the promotion? How long did you last, and how did you do?
1968 to 81. And then I sold my end of the business to my partner's son and got out of it.
Really?
I got out of it just before the WWE came in and desecrated the entire coast.
Yeah.
And we sent him back the very first champion, too, my tag partner, Jimmy Snuka.
What's he doing today?
They never saw anybody. Jimmy, he's living in New Jersey. He still works from time to time. He still looks pretty buff for 67 years old, but his head looks like somebody ran over with a lawnmower.
Like Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah, worse than that.
Road map, north and south.
Yeah.
Some guys were east and
yeah.
south.
Yeah. You remember Eric Froelich?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Eric's still around. He's up in Canada. Freddie Barron's still there. Dean Higuchi is. Do you remember Dean Ho?
Yes.
Dean Higuchi, the big Hawaiian kid. He's still up there. He's a psychologist now.
No kidding.
He went to school, got his degrees.
He had that gym in Hawaii.
He at one time was Mr. Hawaii. He won the title there at one time.
He had a gym
still out there.
Go ahead. Who's talking?
Me. Jerry, Dutch, is Jack Bent still out there?
Is Jack who?
Bentz.
Jack Bentz, though, Jack died here about 6-7 years ago.
Oh, did he really?
He was up in British Columbia, lived in British Columbia. He's gone.
I'll be told.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys out here that are gone. Stasiak's gone, Jonathan Boyd's gone. Oh, Haru Sasaki's gone. Kenji just died here recently. There's a bunch of them. Johnny Tolis, my tag team partner from Canada, he's gone. Steve Little Bear, Vince Bryant, he's gone. On and on and on. It just sickens me. Hey, Dick, we're the last of a very, very, very special generation that lived during the wrestling during its heyday. And nobody could ever take that from us.
Oh, I agree with you. And you know, there's only a few of us left. You know, you talk about Kenji Shibuya. I tell you a funny story. In Indianapolis, working for Barnett, big show on a Thursday night. Balk Estes is the front man, but he's got an office there. And so a few of the boys go to the office before the big show, like a half an hour before you have to be in the dressing room. So you're hanging out there. So I happen to go up to the office at the Claypool Hotel, I think it was, and Kenji's sitting there. And we're talking a little bit, and the phone rings. And Balk Estes picks up the phone, and he says, yes. He says, no. He says, I'm just the cleanup man here. What can I do for you? And the guy on the phone had a Japanese sword, and he wanted the sword to be, if he could have a message sent to the Japanese wrestler, Kenji Shibuya and Mitsuo Arakawa, if they could translate what's on the sword that he had from a relative. And Balk Estes says, well, hold it, just a minute. He says, you're very lucky. He says, we got one of the wrestlers right here. Mr. Kenji Shibuya is here. Now, Kenji's from Hawaii. He talks as plain as English as you. Now he's going to have to imitate a Japanese guy on the phone. So he says, he turned it into a comedy. He says, oh, by the way, I'm up in Seattle, Washington at a reunion, and I'm telling this to Shibuya and his wife and Don Leola Johnson and a few other people. And I says, I'm sending him to the office there, and Balk Estes hangs the phone to Kenji. And Kenji says, hello? And everybody in the guy says, hello? And Kenji says, what your name? And the guy says, evidently, Roach, Carl Roach or something. He says, Roach? Roach? Is that like a cockroach? Then he had that smile. He squinted up his face. And I told him that story of the reunion in Seattle. Everybody bust out laughing. He said, you remember that? I said, it was funny. How could I forget it?
Oh, my. Well, those were the days. Hey, how long does this radio show go on, you guys?
Till in the morning.
We got about, well, now that Dick's on here, we may go all night.
My stars, what have we been talking here? 5:15 at 6:44. My stars, do you have to pay for this show, or is it free?
No, it's free. It's a two-hour show. It's a two-hour show.
Oh, it's free.
We got about 10 minutes left.
Oh, you guys get away with murder.
Yeah, usually when we have Dick on as a guest, I just say, here's Dick Steinborn, the rest of us just sit back and listen.
Oh, Dick's got to. Dick can tell stories, if I remember correctly. Dick can tell stories from now till and I've got a few on him, too, but I won't do this in mixed company.
Why not?
Especially from that Japan tour now, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I remember that.
Yes, I won't say anything about that.
Oh, let me tell you. We go to Japan, and all of a sudden we have these Japanese girlfriends, all right? So what are the... I forgot what it was, but we were at a hotel, and what happened was Dutch had some friends up to his room, and Dutch made too quick of a move, and the party moved out. And the party went down to Rip Hawk, and Rip Hawk says... My girlfriend says that he was too fast or too forward or something at that particular time. Dick, would you mind taking this young lady? I said, well, glad to. And she was very thin. She had no bust. Look at a man. And just this quiet girl. And she was the girlfriend of Rip Hawk's girl. All right. So we call for a cab. So we get the cab, and the streets are all clean. I mean, they're clean as anything. So I went outside before the cab came, and I picked up about 12 little pieces of rock. It was very hard to find them. I mean, everything was so clean in Japan. And I gave this to the girl, and we sat in the cab. And as the cab slowly pulled away, I said, chatamate, which means hold on a minute. And Dutch comes out of the hotel with his bag, and I roll down the window, and I said, throw the rocks at his feet. She threw rocks at his feet.
She threw rocks at us. Yeah, I remember that one. I remember that. Oh, man. Who was the Frenchman he was from Montreal, big kid. Chris Markoff. Wasn't he French, Chris Markoff? Remember him?
Yeah, yes, Markoff, and he had somebody else as a tag team partner, too. Michael Lubitsch, Lubitsch and Markoff. In the Carolinas.
Yeah, yeah. Chris was in one of the tours with us. we drove that poor white man completely insane. He was so mad at us. He wanted to leave the tour early. Jonathan got under his skin real good. Leo was very good at doing that without hardly saying anything. Oh, by the way, Leo just had pancreatic cancer.
Who did?
Dick. Leo. Jonathan.
Oh, Don Leo?
Yeah, Don Leo, yeah. He's had it in several places, but this one went into his pancreas.
Oh, my goodness.
So.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He could barely move. He's on canes. He could just barely move. I had to help him out of the car into the house.
Wow.
It's about closing time for a lot of us, you know.
Yeah. I have pictures of him.
Yeah, you're pretty lucky. Your DNA goes pretty deep. You're going to live to be 106.
Well, I hope so. Shoot.
You know, I don't know whether I want to live that old. No, I won't know anybody. All my friends will be gone. Everybody else will be gone. That's a terrible age.
Well, you can call.
That's why I like what the Bible says.
I came home to
do it. Jerry, that's why I like what the Scripture says.
What's that, Dutch?
Jerry?
Yes.
The Scripture says, here's the life of a man, 80. A score is 20, 3 times 20, 60, add 10 to it. And then the next sentence says, anything else is a blessing from the Lord by God. So if you live past 70, you're being blessed, and you don't even realize it. From the dust you came, the dust you shall return. What happens when we die? Your body becomes corrupted, you turn back to the dust from which you were made of. People can't get that through their thick heads. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, every day.
I came over to visit my dad one time, and he says to me one time, he says, I wonder how I'm going to go. Daddy, I see you're such good condition, good health. I said, so I started snapping my finger while I was driving this car. And I kept snapping. I said, that's your heart, Daddy. And I kept snapping it. I said, why are you sleeping about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning? I stopped snapping the fingers in front of him. And for the next 2 years, my father, in his late years, drove himself to sleep. He slept all the time. My brother called me 2 months later. He said, he's sleeping all the time. I said, well, I knew what he was doing. You know, he didn't want to fight the elements and so forth, and he just kept sleeping and sleeping. I went down there one time to visit him, and my brother was with me. We would take him to breakfast. He sat up. He slept. He ate. He slept. Got back in the car. He slept. He went in the bedroom and slept. He slept all the time. And 2 years later, my brother walked in on him. He was dead on the bed. And he called the fire department, and they came and beat him on the chest and brought him back to life. And $61,000 later, and 2 weeks later, he died in the hospital. So he decided he wanted to do it his way. And my brother screwed it up. So it all depends on how you want to go, religiously or, you know.
Yeah. Well, I like kind of being alive. It's better than the alternative.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Every day, to me, you can't do anything about yesterday. There's nothing you can do about the past. There's sure nothing you can do about the future because it's not here. That's why God called today the present. And each day to me anymore is a present. I thank God for every bit of breath I got.
Yes, I do too.
The beautiful
and that's my sad tale.
Forget yesterday, live for today, and plan for tomorrow. Yes, sir.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, listen, you guys, I'm going to get out of here and let you guys wrap it up. Dick, it was sure good hearing from you. I thought, man, my stars, I haven't heard from you since Moses was a baby. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, but you were around. Think about it. Well, good to talk to you, too. Not a good name.
Yeah. Well, some people told me that I was so old that my life insurance covered Indian raids, so.
Hey, I just now remember. I got to remember. I got to put you in the book about that toilet thing in Japan. Thanks for reminding me.
isn't that amazing? It's just amazing. Look, you guys, thank you very much for having me on.
Well, thanks for that. Appreciate your time,
Dutch. It was really great to talk to you.
It was Jerry. It was sure splendid talking to you, Jerry. Boy, what bring back some memories.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed working for you. You can put that in your book, because I mean.
Well, God bless you. You have a good week, all of you guys, and keep your face in the wind. Lots of wind in your sails.
Yes,
may the Lord bless all of you. I'll talk to you later. Call anytime.
Please do.
Right. All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Well,
that was great to hear.
Now somebody has as many stories as you do. What a great guy. A great guy.
I'll have to get Dick. I'll have to get if you guys don't mind. I'll have to email Dutch yours and Jerry's phone up so he can keep
please do.
He is.
Yeah.
I called this morning just to verify. Well, it was morning for him. It was afternoon for me. Verify that we were still on for night. And his wife says, "Oh, he's already up and gone fishing."
Really? Who you got on next week?
Right now I don't have anything planned because we're gonna have a show next week, but I'm gonna be in a new town next week, but I'm keeping it a secret as to where I'm gonna be for right now because.
I've been talking to Jackie Clark and trying to get him on.
Anytime, yeah. Anytime he wants to be on, tell him you know, let you know, and you let me know, and we'll get him on here.
All right.
It
could be the spur of the moment. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Right now, I don't have anything planned. It may just be the three of us and you, if you want to join us, or whoever else we get in. Because like I said, I'm leaving New Jersey next Wednesday, where I'm going is a 2-day car trip. So, but I'll be settled in by next Thursday night, so we're planning on the show. I just haven't thought that far ahead as to what we're going to do. But
I'll see if I can get Frogger to come in.
Yeah, do that. Let me know. I would love to have him. In fact, if if I knew how to get in touch with Don, I'd love to have the two of them on there, but we may get kicked off the air real quick.
Yeah, we've never looked for toothbrushes on the radio.
Well, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. It's starting to thunder here, and the lights are flashing, so I better get off while I've still got my computer's got power. Dick, I appreciate you calling in. And
right.
Jerry and Bobby, missed you guys last week, and this was fun. This was
yeah,
fun.
I enjoyed it.
Very good tonight.
Can't wait till next week.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great night.
Right.
You too, Dick.
Bobby.
Take care, Dick.
Good night, guys. Right. Mike, give me a jingle, bud, when you get a chance.
I will. I'll call you as soon as we get off here. I got to ask you something anyway.
All right. Good night, guys.
All right. Good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.